Hi, I'm Samantha, a past guest on CJAM's HandyLink. You're listening to HandyLink on CJAM 99.1 FM, Windsor, Detroit.
Hello and welcome to HandyLink, sponsored by the Italian-Canadian Handy Capable Association. I'm your host, Cam Wells. The first segment of our show, I'll be chatting with two panelists from the Yukon Human Rights Commission. They'll be telling us about recent happenings in their area. So tell me a little bit about some of the recent human rights happenings in the Yukon area.
I guess one of the most exciting things that the Commission has been a part of in the last decade happened the first week in December, and that's when the Yukon Human Rights Commission and the Yukon Council on Disabilities, which is a local NGO here, hosted with some community development funding that we applied for 2 years ago, actually, a workshop, training workshop, with Marcia Ryu and Paula Hearn from Disability Rights Promotion International at York University to come and train over 20 people from across the Yukon, from places as far away as Old Crow and Dawson City, and as well from the city of Whitehorse, and across all disabilities. And it was really amazing training, very intensive, but very high caliber. And then after the training, 3 days, which was training in, well, Stephanie could probably tell you a little more about the training in a minute, but after that we did a summit that was open to the public to talk about the Convention on the Rights of Persons with Disability and the need for an independent monitoring mechanism that has people with disabilities monitoring their rights in the Yukon. And we had ministers of the territorial government, Minister of Justice and Minister of Health and Social Services there. We had the mayor and city councilors. We had other politicians and interested organizations, people with disabilities, people who were interested in the issues. And it was very well attended and quite amazing in what happened during the summit, and I'll let Stephanie talk a little more about that because she was the MC for the summit. And coming out of it was some political action that I think we didn't really expect but definitely wanted to capitalize on. And so there's been more development since then, but maybe I could turn it over to Stephanie and she can tell you a little more about what happened at the summit.
So, you know, as Heather said, we had all members of the community attending, which was really exciting. The media just grabbed this movement and ran with it, and they are one of our biggest allies in all of this, which was really exciting to feel that kind of support from the community. And I was born with a disability, but I've never been involved in any kind of human rights for disability or not. And so this was kind of my first experience with it. And Marcia Ryu from York University came in and taught a group of us, about almost 30 people with disability across the Yukon, what our rights were, how to monitor them. And she really just gave us a platform for our voices to be heard. And she just gave us a lot of resources to move forward together. So she's not here anymore, but she left us with motivation, inspiration, resources, a feeling of empowerment. So we've created a committee, the Yukon Disability Rights Committee, and we plan on seeing this movement forward. And mainly that means having a monitoring mechanism where people with disability are monitoring their own rights And there's lots of great initiatives with great intentions for disability rights here in the Yukon, but there's not a lot of data supporting it. There's not a lot of grounds for these initiatives, and there's definitely not a monitoring process to see if they're being effective or not. So we would just really like to play a part in this and make sure that all of the government's funding going towards disability rights initiatives are actually being effective, and that monitoring to be done by people with disability for people with disability.
So were there any challenges in getting this all set up?
It took us 2 years to secure the funding, and it was a small amount of funding, but it enabled us to bring Marcia and Paula here from Toronto. It enabled us to print the materials, and a lot of the funding was for travel for people who were coming in from the communities for basically a week. And challenges were when one of the panels, so the day of the summit was a morning of panels, people with disabilities talking about their lived reality, their life experiences here in the Yukon, and one of the panel members who had been trained in the workshop said that he would like to see a motion in the legislature that would speak to this need for an independent monitoring mechanism here in the Yukon. And there were politicians in the audience, so one of them asked for the text of the motion he was recommending, and took it over and tabled it in the legislature that day, the day of the summit. And as that was happening, and this was an NDP MLA, her name's Jan Stick, as that was happening, a backbencher from the Yukon Party, which is the governing party here, also tabled a motion. And his motion was, I think, more geared to the first part of Article 33, which talks about a focal point in government designated work on the convention. There was a series of further motions into the House. And so this was very, very quick, the last motion, which was very comprehensive and was really using the text of Article 33, which is the part of the convention that talks about how it will be monitored. And that motion called for the Minister of Justice to table legislation to set up this monitoring mechanism in the spring. So that also was a very, sort of bold and fast initiative. So maybe I can get Stephanie to just fill you in on what happened with that and the meetings that we've been having since.
And so I was very new to this convention, so I'll just kind of clarify that all of the summit and the Disability Rights Committee, everything is geared around the United Nations Convention on the Rights of Persons with Disabilities that Canada has signed with the agreement of all the provinces and territories. So when we're referring to Article 33, it is in this UN convention that Canada has already agreed to and the Yukon has already agreed to. So we're moving forward, basically asking for this independent monitoring mechanism, which would look like a group of people that are not in the government, who are constantly, proactively monitoring the quality of life of people with disability in the Yukon. And so this is what we are asking the government to support us on, because it's in this convention that they've already signed on to. So we're not asking the government to support anything that they haven't already signed on to. It's just a matter of implementing it and what that looks like. And so we've had some meetings with local MLAs, as well as two of the ministers, the Minister of Justice and the Minister of Health and Social Services, in the last couple weeks. And it's been really exciting, because a lot of what we're doing with the government and the local MLAs is education, just explaining to them about the UN Convention on Rights of Persons with Disabilities and what we're hoping to see implemented and the importance of it. And something that we're also really trying to hit home with them is that there are people with disability in the Yukon who've now been trained on how to monitor their rights, how to interview other people with disability on their rights, and also write reports on this. And then there's a whole other side to it, where we've also been trained on how to monitor the media and systemic monitoring, the current policies, practices, and laws that are already in place. So there's people who are trained and willing and able to make this happen. So really, we are coming fully loaded to the government with a great proposal that, you know, we're basically handing them the full package. We just want their support on it. So it's been really exciting, and the meetings have been going really well, and we'll continue to have these meetings into the new year.
So what are the next immediate steps?
So the next immediate steps, we'll meet with both of those ministers once again in the new year, as well as the Yukon Disability Rights Committee will meet again once the new year has begun as well, and we're going to move forward. And that means we are creating a huge community of people with disability in the Yukon, and so that's reaching out to other people with disability who didn't participate in the workshops of the summit, and see who would be willing participants for these interviews, so we can start collecting data and having a real comprehensive view in these reports of what is the quality of life for persons with disability in the Yukon, and while trying to gain support and funding through our government. So it's kind of a two-step parallel roads that we'll be going down in the new year.
Like to thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Yes.
They went on to mention meetings with CASHRA about making this the standard for accessibility monitoring in Canada. They want nonpartisan participation, which I think is important, because regardless of who's in power, disability rights should always be monitored and protected. Fact is, it's all about working toward the future. No matter who's making more formal decisions, the decision should always be based on what is in the best interests of individuals with disabilities. HandyLink will be right back after these commercial messages, so stay tuned.
We're obviously shocked by the decision of the court in Egypt.
What this ruling means is that in Egypt, journalism is a crime.
Dark day for media freedom in Egypt.
A fellow Canadian citizen, Mohamed Fahmy, has been sentenced to 7 years in an Egyptian jail for simply being a journalist. His only crime? Reporting the truth. The Canadian government has been unable to secure his release, so now it's up to us. You can help set Mohamed free. Visit cjfe.org to find out how. This message is brought to you by the Canadian Journalists for Free Expression.
Welcome back to HandyLink, sponsored by the Italian-Canadian Handy Capable Association. I'm your host, Cam Wells. Earlier in our show, we heard from the Yukon Human Rights Commission about recent happenings with disability rights monitoring. In this segment of our show, we'll hear from Carmela Hutchinson from Don Raff, Canada. So tell me a little bit about the impact that the lack of door-to-door delivery for postal services can have on an individual with a disability.
People with disabilities are going to be impacted tremendously by the stopping of home delivery. Most people will have their delivery needs, they'll choose where they live on the basis of how the mail is delivered. That's first and foremost. So the biggest impact is that people may have to move, or they may have to start relying on somebody else, such as a relative or caregiver, to fetch their mail, and that places them in a position of vulnerability. That's right off the start. And then we get into the different disabilities and their impact. So if a person is visually impaired and they have to try and make their way to the box, they're not going to be able to see who else is in the vicinity, and that puts them in a position of vulnerability. There are also people with hearing disabilities have the same problem as people who are visually impaired, because they're not going to be able to hear somebody who may be around or hear someone coming up behind them. Then we move on to people with mobility issues, and there are many different types of mobility issues that are problematic in this discourse. One of the things that can happen is that if a person is, you know, high paraplegic, high quadriplegic, they're not going to be able to necessarily reach the box from their chair. They may not have finger movement to open it. And then there becomes the whole issue of the access to the box. If there is snow about, if there is ice, if there's cracks in the pavement that are uneven surfaces, all of those things are going to be problematic for somebody who has a mobility issue. And that extends even farther into people in the place that I call ambulatory health, which are people who are able to walk with a cane or a walker, or maybe they use neither, but they have very difficult gait, and they're unsteady, and they're trying to get to that box. And we just had someone who recently, getting off a bus, broke their hip on an uneven sidewalk. So those are the kinds of things that are going to happen to people with mobility disabilities. And then there are the folks with intellectual disabilities. And people with intellectual disabilities are going to be in a situation where maybe they can't read the box or they can't remember its position. And maybe their coordination isn't very good, so they're trying to find a key, or they're not sure, so they're trying to ask somebody what number, you know, they might know the number, but they can't read it, so they might ask somebody to point that out. And they become extremely vulnerable, because the second that they have to do that, it alerts somebody dangerous that this is someone who is vulnerable. The next thing you know, they have the person's key. Oh, I'll get that for you. And they have the person's key in a second, and they're in that box, and right away, they've got complete and ready access to the box. So that is another example of how people are made vulnerable. The other effect that this is going to have is on people who have home delivery, because they have difficulty going out to a community mailbox because of their mental illness. This can be people living with extreme paranoia. This can be people who are agoraphobic and cannot handle being out in public places, and also people who are victims of stalking, sexual assault, or have PTSD. And they all are folks who generally are affected by being in environments that are more public. And that also will pose tremendous difficulties for them. And while they do not have a mobility issue and they look well enough to work, those are invisible disabilities. And that's going to have a profound effect on them as well.
So if you could send any one message about the need for a better solution, what would it be?
It would be, I think, first off, to keep mail delivery going. I think that there's probably some other way to implement a cost-saving measure. I think it's vastly important that service be maintained. If that really cannot be done, then I would suggest that it would become very important to have a Council of Canadians with Disabilities solution recommended, which is their proposed reducing the frequency of mail delivery.
Projects on the horizon for Don Raff Canada in regards to this?
Disabled Women's Network of Canada, in coalition with Canadian Union of Postal Workers, has launched a charter challenge at the Supreme Court in order to try and have this issue struck down. Because basically, it's not good for Canadians with disabilities, and it's not good for senior Canadians with disabilities which, as you know, is going to be one of the largest demographics in Canada.
So, are there any challenges that you foresee in getting this struck down?
I think that I would like to hope that we have a very solid case. I would hope that, one can never comment on what an outcome is going to be, but I certainly hope that we will be able to have a successful outcome.
I'd like to thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you could stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Thank you very much, Pam.
Of course. And to conclude our show for today, a look at some recent yoga happenings with our friend Nicole Daigneault. So tell me a little bit about recent happenings with the yoga program.
Thank you, Cam, as always, for allowing me to share such awesome information that's available for people. I've been having those ongoing classes both at Harmony and Action and in my suite at the Jackson Park Health Center. For people with special needs, those programs are in their third year of running now. And I have just ongoing, consistent students in all those groups, and they're continuously growing. I'm seeing more and more new faces. The word's getting out. People are bringing their friends. So that's all really wonderful. And I want to just really remind you and your listeners that the group at Harmony in Action and my suite at the Jackson Park Health Center are wheelchair accessible. And so people who have even very limited movement are benefiting from these classes. You know, we're getting some minimal physical movement and often with assistance from me or any of the helpers that are there, but also even just the mental training and the breathing, the breath control. I remember speaking with you about one of my students with cerebral palsy who really uses the breathing techniques to help deal with the anxiety about everything that's possibly, the tendencies to maybe, start to really seize up and everything that goes with that. She's, sleeping better and just tons of benefits like that. So thank you again for just really helping to get that information out there.
Of course. And you were telling me earlier you've started on something new as well.
Well, yes, I'm happy to say that, my suite there at the Jackson Park Health Center has been getting, more and more use. I'm really enjoying some private sessions where I'm working with people with various ranges of challenge, from, problems with their joints, problems with, obesity, problems with mental disorder, schizophrenia, really working on focus, really working on breath, strengthening limbs, strengthening joints, having good seating posture, having good standing posture, and all of that is great. And I'm also just have become a treatment facilitator, working with a team of people out of Maryvale, where there's an ongoing study being connected there on the adolescents there about mindfulness. So, that's another wonderful thing that's going on. And I'm just really so pleased to be able to challenge myself with such incredible groups of people in front of me and continue to learn from them and help to seek and just really enjoy seeing people find, a bit of calm, a bit of peace, of relaxation, both physical and mental. That's just so wonderful to see. So again, thank you, and just really thankful to all of the community who has helped to just get the word out. Tom Porter and the Windsor Squash and Fitness Club and the Jackson Park Health Center and just everybody who's just right from the get-go really kind of supported this momentum. So just very, very thankful and thankful to you for these very often interviews. I'm really so happy to speak with you and your listeners as often as you're willing to have me on. So thank you, Cam.
Of course. And in your time with this new venture with Maryvale, is there any success that you wanted to note?
I'm sorry, I lost you just for a minute there. Can you repeat your question, Cam? I'm so sorry.
So, working with Maryvale on this new venture, is there any success you'd like to share?
Well, I think anyone who's able to sit still in a chair, you know, with a nice strong spine and their eyes focusing and focusing on their breath and focusing on the coming and going thoughts, if anyone could do that for a minute, I think that that's a huge success. And you know, we're challenging the group with ever increasing lengths of practicing that kind of mindfulness. So it's all just a fabulous everything is just really successful, in my opinion. Just taking in extra oxygen alone is wonderful for everyone to do every day. You know, and to add in just those calm moments for the mind and maybe a bit more excellent patterns for your physical body, to support all of that great, strong mental health. I just really feel so blessed to be involved in all of this. So, yeah, thank you.
Of course. I'd like to thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Sure.
Some of the views expressed in the preceding interviews were solely those of the individuals and don't necessarily reflect those of the show or anyone at CGM 99.1 FM. Fact is, folks, things really are moving forward in terms of disability life. Hearing that so much enthusiasm about the work that's going on in the Yukon in particular, just give an opportunity for the folks with disabilities up there just to know their rights, to be able to act upon their rights. It's an ongoing process. The first step is always awareness. As a person with a disability, you should always know what can be done. Never look at it as being something that's hopeless or an insurmountable obstacle. Fact is, if you know there is at least something that can help make things a little better, it's at least a starting place. It might not be the end-all be-all, it might not be a cure, but, as I've said many times before, disability life is all about taking steps, taking the next step towards better rights, better understanding. But also, in terms of things such as door-to-door postal delivery, there is a point to be made there. It's important that we as a society don't lose the things that actually work. This is a big issue. Fact is, yes, there have to be budgetary changes. That is a valid concern. But to do so at the expense of a large segment of the population, that's not a winning proposition, folks. Fact is, sitting down, coming up with a solution that works for everybody is the most reasonable approach. Disability life is about saying, I'm convinced there is a way, and I'm going to find it. That is how progress begins, by accepting the fact that there is at least a possibility to move forward, to make change, to make progress, and just to better ourselves as a society. This has been HandyLink. I'm your host, Cam Wells, reminding you we're all equal. So get on out there and have yourselves a good one. Something tells me you've earned it, folks. We'll see you next week.